right, first episode of the new year. We're just starting to talk a little bit about things we were going to cover on the show and had an interesting sidebar. Somebody got in touch with you, Dave, as far as
completing the field component for their archery certification, their archery like education certification.
Right, right.
That a lot of states are requiring now to put in for tags.
So Idaho is one I used as an example.
Yeah.
They require, and you have to buy the special archery certification, but at the very least in Idaho, all you have to do is demonstrate that you've drawn an archery tag in another state.
In another state.
So, like, I just use my Nevada stuff up there. They accepted that. I didn't have to take a specific archery hunter education.
All right.
I believe Montana's the same way.
We'll have to look into that and see what states require the actual certificate, because, you know, Department of Wildlife here offers the certificate. Kicker is right now is there's the field component has to be completed before you can get your license.
Right.
Or your certificate saying you've passed an archery education course. And I know the course here in the state in Nevada is good nationwide. It's the standard.
I've never taken an archery specific hunter education thing.
In Nevada, you
don't need it.
You don't need it, but
right.
Other states do. Like Alaska, you have to have an archery certification course. But anyway, I had to provide them with the state that I took the course in and then my certification number.
Okay.
So my certification number is 2.
No kidding?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Who was number 1?
Timmy Thomas.
Seriously?
He's the one that created the program through Endow.
Oh, okay.
Years ago. He's number 1 and I'm number 2.
Yeah, you guys were the test guinea pigs.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, and it was cool. Then we just started teaching classes. But right now, a few folks have contacted me, and if you're listening right now, I'm still looking into it. I've emailed one of you, and I will email the other one here after the show today in relation to the field component. I know there's one coming up, I guess, in Las Vegas. That doesn't really help.
No.
You're not going to drive from Reno to Vegas. So we'll have to look into that before. Well, I mean, people are starting to put in for tags for certain places right now. I mean, it's starting here January.
Yeah.
You know, this is the beginning of tag application.
So that out of the way, hey, the show is Nevada Backcountry. It is a new year. We got a handful of topics we're going to cover. Again, these are questions we've been emailed or people have sent us messages on. We're going to get into some budget rifle options. Somebody sent me an email about high-end clothing. We'll talk meat transportation, and then we'll talk a little bit about coolers later on in the show. Brought to you by Hunt & House Archery Center, Legacy Sports International, Truck Envy, and Out West Buildings in Fallon. Let's jump right into high-end clothing, Dave.
Yes.
I'll preface everything I'm about to say with this. More deer have probably died
in jeans and a flannel
shirt. Yeah, yeah. Levi's 501s and a flannel shirt, red checkered flannel shirt.
Yep.
There's an actual name for that. Do you know what it is?
The Chuck Adams?
No, buffalo plaid.
Oh.
That's the pattern.
Oh, that's the pattern? Oh.
Yeah.
Because that was Chuck Adams. That's all he hunted in.
Oh, yeah, most of those guys.
And a red flannel shirt. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one thing that I've always kind of tossed around is like, do I need this $600
right.
pair of coveralls or will the $120 ones work? And I've gone back and forth. I think personally, one of my favorite hunting pairs of pants for cold weather are old Vietnam flight pants. It's like a heavy fabric, almost like a canvas.
Yeah.
And then it is wool inside it. Heavy
wool
inside. And I picked them up 25 years ago at Twin Cities Surplus for like $5. And they're still, to this day, the most comfortable pants. They're my go-to when it's chilly out and I'm like chasing chucker or on a hunt of any kind or outside, even like duck hunting. I put those on and throw the waders on.
They're
so
your go-to.
Awesome.
Okay.
They're my go-to.
Yeah.
But, you know, it comes down to like comfort. A lot of that really high-end stuff, it's probably you get what you pay for in quality.
I mean,
in relation to quality, like how well it's made, how the stitches, probably the quality of the fabrics and all of that stuff. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for people that know me and have hunted with me, I am a Sitka loyalist.
Yeah, you're a poster child for Sitka.
Let me back up. It's not the camo. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not one of these guys that thinks that, oh, this camo works. This is why I like this stuff for the pattern. And I think movement is the biggest thing.
Yes.
I think you could be standing there in all brown and be perfectly fine as long as you're not look like one of those inflatable things at a used car lot. As long as you're not doing that, you're good. So going back from there, though, you know, for the style of hunting I like to do, backpack hunting in the backcountry, I absolutely think high-end clothing helps. Again, not the camo pattern. It's not the brand on it. There's a handful of them now that are producing really good stuff. But I would say it's the weight and the durability.
I've got a friend who purchased. He went and bought all the latest and
greatest. Had to have the cool guy stuff.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, like the first day of school stuff. Like, I'm getting this. And so he bought all of that stuff. The pants with the knee pads and the butt pads. And we went on an elk hunt this 2 years ago now, not this last year, year before last. And he got done with that hunt, and he goes, this is some of the most uncomfortable clothes I've ever worn in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he also froze his butt off, even though it was supposed to be
super, yep. So that brings me to my second point. You got to be honest with yourself about what type of hunting you do.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing, like the stuff I wear and the stuff I like, man, if you're stand hunting or still hunting, it's not the stuff to wear.
No.
It's not warm enough. No. Now, if you were putting a 50-pound pack on and you were running ridges all day, it's mostly, for me, it comes down to the how quickly the stuff dries. And I'll use a recent example. Hunting in Idaho, and people that have hunted that northern panhandle region in Idaho, water comes up out of the ground. Oh. I mean, you are just wet.
Yeah, you go through a bunch of brush, and from your waist down, you're soaked.
And then, I mean, the underside of your sleeping pad in the morning is wet. You're just wet. It's
damp.
So that is one of those environments where the stuff that I really like, it actually does dry during the day. I've used First Light stuff before, not to throw them under the bus, but their big thing was the wool stuff.
Yeah.
You can't hunt the panhandle of Idaho in wool stuff. It weighs 10 pounds and it gets that weird, it starts to stretch out when it gets wet.
Right.
It's miserable.
Yeah. Cause I know when I hunt whitetail on a stand, I've got one of those, like Carhartt. It's almost like a body
overall
suit.
Things
yeah,
or coveralls.
Like a body suit. And it comes up to about, you know, right below the chest.
Okay.
Magic. Yep. Now they make them with little battery heaters in them. I should have waited a year or two and bought that one.
I saw somebody with that when I took my daughter out to Ohio on that hunt. Some of those diehard whitetail guys, it's like a whole electronic bodysuit.
Yeah. When I hunted in Illinois and it's
7 degrees.
-9 and you're standing up in a tree stand. Trust me.
It's
a whole different program there, man. You don't care. It's just all you want is warm. It really comes down to comfort. For years, I hunted in brown Levi's.
Perfect.
The tan and brown Levi's.
Yeah.
And then I just wore, you know, a camouflage shirt, usually a sagebrush camo pattern or something.
Successfully
hunted like that until a couple years ago, the wife picked me up a bunch of some of those.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I saw you. Yeah.
Yeah, they're nice. I like them. But
is it worth it? Was the question.
Is it worth it? Really, it depends on what kind of hunting are you doing. Like you had said, Henry, are you just going to go to camp and hike out of camp, or are you going backcountry?
Yep.
Is it cold? Is it hot? I mean,
let's go to break. What do you want to go next? Budget rifles?
I say let's get into some budget rifles.
All right, budget rifles coming up after the break. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Break, Dave. We were talking about the camo company that you were talking about out of Fallon.
Yeah, the One Rate.
One Rate
Gear.
Yeah.
One Rate Gear. Joel is the owner.
Okay.
And the stuff is as good of quality, if not better quality, than I think like QU and Sitka. The stitching is thick. It's heavy. Clothes are incredibly durable. I've got some pants. I got two shirts and two jackets. I can't say enough about them. They're awesome.
Yeah, so. The pattern is like a heartbeat. I forget. Somebody in his family had some kind of health issue or something, and that's what inspired the echocardiogram.
Kind of pattern?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's a cool pattern, and price-wise, it's way cheaper than the really high-end companies. And the zippers are fantastic. I think the zippers, where I don't know where he gets them, but they're waterproof, and they're way better than
your standard run-of-the-mill stuff.
Well, any of the ones I've used, the Sitka, the QU, you know how they have that. It's almost like it feels like a rubber kind of zipper.
Right, right, yeah.
I've had those, and some of them have failed on me and gone to...
Zippers always fail, yep.
His, I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're made out of, but they're fantastic.
He should be a guest on the show at some point.
Yeah, we should.
I've seen him around. I just have never taken the time. I'm kind of at that point, like we were discussing, where it's like, I got all the camo I need. I don't need any more stuff. So I'm not actively looking for stuff, but we should get him on the show. Now, budget rifles.
Yes. Budget rifles.
So let's go.
So what are we talking when we say budget? We're talking like under $1,000 scope and gun, or
full
just
setup under a grand. Yeah.
Under a grand.
So how terrible is that nowadays budget is $1,000 or less?
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it seems crazy. Now, that being said, I think there's some stuff out there for under that price point that blows away stuff from 20, 30 years ago. You know, famously, the Jarrett Beanfield rifle was like one of the first custom rifles I remember reading about as a kid that was like just stupid accurate. Now it seems like you can walk into any big box store in the country and for under $1,000 walk out with something that rivals custom gun accuracy from 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I bet even probably 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
It's pretty crazy. And let's get a plug for Legacy Sports International in here. And it's not just because they are a sponsor of the show, but one of their rifles made it on my list. It's kind of the upper end.
Made it on mine as well.
Okay. So go, Dave. What would be a couple of your recommendations?
Okay. So one of the ones is the Hawa 1500.
Okay. Hawa Hoag.
Hawa Hoag.
Yep.
Yeah, the bolt action. The reviews on that were absolutely stellar.
Stupid accurate.
Stupid accurate. Yep. Comfortable, they said. Shootability was rating from 1 to 10. It was in the 9s.
Yeah.
So it was a good one. The other one would be the Browning X-Bolt,
the
Hunter, the Western Hunter. Here's one I thought was kind of interesting as I was kind of reading up on it. I thought there's absolutely no way there's one of these rifles for under $1,000. It's actually half the price.
Okay.
Is a Weatherby Vanguard.
Okay, so Weatherby Vanguard is a Hawa 1500.
There you go.
It comes out of the same factory.
Okay.
Yeah. So full disclosure for anybody listening, my first job after I got out of the military was at Legacy Sports International. I know the product inside and out.
Gotcha.
You know, my job was for a little while when customers would send something in and say like, oh, this is broken, doesn't work, or doesn't shoot, won't hold the group. I would just go out to the range and I'd spend all day shooting, putting different loads through them until I figured out, okay, it is a legitimate problem. There's some sort of issue, or no, homeboy from Arkansas just can't shoot.
Gotcha.
So full disclosure, the Weatherby Vanguard is a Hawa 1500, and for anybody that has one, just look like right where the barrel threads into the receiver, and you'll see Hawa Manufacturing Limited Japan. That's who makes the Weatherby Vanguard.
Oh, so stick with the Hawa.
Yeah.
1500.
Yep.
Other one was the Winchester XPR.
Oh, okay. I'm a big Winchester Model 70 fan.
Yeah, that's on the list too, but
they're a little pricier.
That's a little pricier. Yeah, this one, the Winchester XPR, is like a little brother to that one.
To the Model 70,
Yeah, it's like $500.
Oh, okay. You're not getting into a Model 70 for that kind of
money.
No. I'll tell you the two I isolated. The Hawa 1500 Vortex scope package. You can walk in. They're in stock at Sportsman's. You can walk in there today, pick one up, and walk out. You got the Vortex scope, the Howa 1500 rifle, $850.
That's awesome.
The rings, the mount, everything. It's all put together. And then the next one I would say that you didn't mention, because I had some of the same that you did, would be the Ruger American with Vortex scope. Same thing. They don't have one in the caliber that I would recommend, but they do have, I think it's a 243 over there at Sportsman's, $690. You can walk out the door. I know there are people listening that are going to say, oh, I had a Vortex. It's not Vortex. The customer service is what you're getting. So the reason I recommended those packages specifically versus something that comes with a different brand of scope is the fact that I know from personal experience, if something happens or it's not working or it's finicky, whatever the situation is, you call Vortex, they'll send you a new one or they'll fix what you got.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
Yeah, their customer service is pretty stellar.
So that for $850. Now, Dave, sticking with the budget theme, did you have a caliber preference?
308.
308, okay. I went 6.5 Creedmoor.
I knew it.
6-1, half a dozen the other.
I knew you were going to. I was thinking that or the it was 6.5.
Oh, PRC.
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 It was a rhyme.
Well, so here's sticking on the budget thing. The 6.5 Creedmoor has become ubiquitous. You can find it in any little gas station, anywhere in Montana, Idaho, whatever. You'll find 6.5 Creedmoor ammo. The reason I went with it is it's slightly cheaper. And you can get pretty much everything from like a plinking 120 grain dirt cheap round to a super expensive long range round. And you can find it anywhere. And the recoil is what gave it the final nod. Slightly less recoil than a 308. With Cynthia, with my wife, 6.5 Creedmoor, she could shoot 500 rounds. She has a 308, a Howa. That's like a couple boxes, and then she's like,
she's
good.
She's done.
Yeah. So lower recoil with the 6.5 Creedmoor is what pushed it over the top for me. But
the 308 for me was because of it's so versatile.
Same
you can
thing.
Hunt anything from antelope to elk with it.
Yep.
And yeah, the shells are relatively inexpensive compared to a 300 Win Mag.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, something in that fashion where the 7mm mags and stuff where they're 50, 60, 70 bucks a box.
Yeah. Well,
and more.
Nosler stuff now is approaching $100 a box.
Yeah. So 308 still reasonable, but
I'm with you. I got 308 written down. I was going back and forth. 6.5 Creedmoor, 308. I do think the 308's a little more versatile, but the recoil thing is what gave the nod to the Creedmoor for me.
Yeah. Well, and I've got that 6.5 Grindle, which I have yet to set up. I still need to do. I got to pick up a scope for it.
Okay.
And pretty sure that'll probably be the wife's gun.
Yeah. And the Grendel, that's one of those new goofy looking little things.
It's a boy. When I got some of the shells for it, and I was like, oh, this can't be right.
This is a weird.
This looks like a 17 shell.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just itty bitty little things,
fat,
but then
little,
super fat.
It's a weird
like
looking
itty
cartridge.
Bitty little bullet on it. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, yep, that's the wife's.
Yeah. No, any of those, and I'll tell you, we've talked on the show before when it comes to caliber recommendations. I like the old school stuff. I like a 7-rem mag. However, here's the bottom line, though. Any of those belted Magnum cartridges, a 300 Win Mag, the 264 Win Mag, it's head spaced off the belt. From a mass production standpoint, it's harder to machine those chambers that are headspaced off the belted rim than it is to headspace off the shoulder. And you tend to have, you can mass produce a 6.5 Creedmoor because it's headspaced off the shoulder of the cartridge. You can mass produce those, churn them out, and almost every single one is going to be a shooter. With a belted Magnum, you're going to have a few that just are super finicky with loads, bullet weights, all kinds of stuff.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
308, another perfect example, head spaced off the shoulder. You could go pick up a $600 308 or a $6,000 308. Both are going to be pretty dang accurate out of the box.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Howa 1500, Ruger American, Browning X-Bolt, There's a handful of them. You can get it packaged with a Vortex scope for under $1,000. I don't think you can beat that.
No, you can't.
There, we've decided.
We're done.
let's go to break. What are we doing next? Let's do meat transportation.
Yes. Okay. Let's transport some meat.
Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Don't forget, Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up at 11. Figured I'd piggyback on the rifle conversation. Now let's switch gears and go meat transportation, Dave.
Yeah.
What you got on meat transportation? And then I'll do my long-winded nonsense.
Your long-winded nonsense. Well, first off, if you are transporting meat from out of state into another state, you know the transportation regulations from state to state. I know bringing anything into the state of Nevada from anywhere, it has to be deboned. Cannot have bone on it.
Okay, yeah, and no brain matter,
right? No brain matter and deboned.
Okay, that's good to know. I knew the brain matter part.
Yeah, I just read that.
Cody. That we had on the show.
Yeah, Cody Schroeder.
Yeah, we need to follow up with him on the,
CWD.
CWD. Thank you. Chronic wasting disease.
Yeah.
We need to get Cody Schroeder back on the show to talk about the CWD issues and transporting of brain matter, but that's a very good point. I was going to skip over all that stuff. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Check the regs.
Yeah, definitely check the regs. But transporting meat. So, you know, they always tell you, you got to keep it dry. What I like to do is I build, and this will lead into our section on coolers and such, but I'll have, you know, the larger coolers and I will build a rack on it. So, but the rack will sit on the bottom of the cooler.
Right.
And then I can load either the solid ice, the cubes, or bags of ice underneath the rack. And then I can put the meat on the rack and it'll never get wet or never sit on the ice.
I got to check that out. I use the wire basket that comes with like bigger coolers, roto molded coolers. We'll talk about all this in the next segment, but I just flip that thing sideways and upside down and then stack on that. I got to check out your thing though, because now I've noticed a lot of the bigger coolers, I don't know if it's a cost savings thing or what, they're not coming with those wire baskets anymore.
No, so I haven't seen one of those wire baskets in quite some time.
Yeah. Well, I think mine goes back 2011 or 12 when I got it. So
Wow.
Who knows?
Yeah, no, I just pull the welder out and go pick up some metal and
like handyman David. I just pull the welder out and go to town.
Build it up myself. And it works great. If I'm in a hurry, and depending on the animal itself, obviously, and cooler space, I try to bone them out the best I can. When you're talking an elk, and you're leaving the leg bones on, I mean, that's you're playing Tetris. So I've broken so many coolers where I'm like, I can't quite get the door shut. So I like just like figure, well, if I just add more force,
it'll work.
And then the hinges come blowing off of it something.
I was going to bring up flying with meat. This is what prompted this segment. This goes back a little ways, but flying back from a hunt. I didn't know at the time you cannot bring ice on an airplane, any liquids. So it has to be dry ice or the meat has to be frozen. Yeah, so I found myself in a bathroom at, I can't remember if it was, what's the DFW or the other one? There's Dallas, Fort Worth, and then
Kennedy,
Love Field.
Love Field.
I can't remember which one it was, but we found ourselves in a bathroom with bloody meat bags, pulling bagged ice out and throwing it in the bathroom trash can. Because they wouldn't let us check the coolers with meat. So,
that had to have been a sight.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah. Thank God it was Texas and not We weren't at like SFO or something.
Oh my God. You know what I mean? You were on the national news.
Oh yeah. Murderers in bathroom.
Two dudes cuffed, getting cuffed and dragged out of a men's bathroom all bloody.
Thank God it was Dallas and it wasn't somewhere else. That's what kind of prompted this. So I got thinking about it and it was like, yeah, man, you have to, this all goes into that hunt prep stuff, but you got to figure out, man, if you're flying back from a hunt and you want to bring the meat, you have got to make sure you know where to get dry ice. That's the only thing they'll let you,
Freeze the bejesus out of it.
Freeze it solid while you are at the hunting location.
Yeah.
And then
pack it tight.
Pack it tight and transport it.
Yeah.
Now, flipping onto the driving thing, like you were stating, you know, keeping it dry, keeping it out of the water with some sort of setup. A couple things before you load the thing up with meat. One, if it's a drive-to hunt and you have moving blankets, moving blankets.
Oh, yes. Those things are awesome.
Cover up the coolers in the bed of the truck. Try to keep them as cold as possible during the hunt.
Yeah, and as full as possible. The fuller the cooler is with frozen meat or ice, what have you, the longer it's going to stay frozen.
Absolutely. And prepping, that's the big thing. The day before I leave for a hunt, I fill up with, we keep those orange juice bottles.
Yeah.
And you fill those with water and we freeze them in our big chest freezer. Yeah. But 24 hours prior to me hitting the road, I load up the cooler with those and let it sit. So it's like seasoning, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Oh, pre-cooling the cooler itself.
Yep. So I'll let that sit overnight. And then in the morning, I take those out. I put in fresh bottles. And then I hit the road and it lasts a lot longer. Ice does. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but it's like seasoning the.
Yeah. Basically the cooler. You're getting the cooler to a cold temp where it's probably, not. So it's going it's going to melt that ice from the.
Keeps ice a lot longer if you do it that way.
And another thing that I do is like the Costco coolers or the big coolers you can pick up at Walmart or what have you, the big 150s, 165 quart ones. And generally made by like Igloo or something. It's not the high-end coolers and stuff. The sides and the bottom are insulated. They've got that heavy, foamy insulation in them. The lids are not.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The lids are not insulated. They're hollow.
Oh, it's I know what you're talking about now. The inexpensive,
yeah, because I mean, the really high end coolers to buy one to haul an elk or a deer or something,
$500-$600.
Oh, way more. Yeah. The one that I just saw was 170 quart blue.
Okay.
And it was $1,000.
Ooh, yeah.
I was like, yeah. So if you do end up with one of the ones like Costco, because I've got four of those things.
Okay.
What I've done is I've drilled holes into the lid and then just gone down to Home Depot and bought that insulation foam great stuff or something and filled the entire lid.
And it works.
Oh, dude. When we were on a deer hunt, that cooler put like 12 blocks of ice in the cooler in preparation of getting an animal. And we were out there for, I don't know, about 7-8 days. The stuff was gone in four. I mean, melted to a pool of floating plastic bags.
Right.
When we hunt, coolers go in underneath the trees where it's shaded, put the moving blankets over it, and then put a tarp over it, try to keep it and done. 4 days, done.
But doing the foam thing,
put the foam in there, those blocks, the next time we went out, had 12, 14, 15 blocks in there. They lasted the entire trip.
Genius idea.
Yeah, I did. And the only reason I knew that the lids were not insulated is because one of those moments when I thought I could close it with a elk leg hanging out and blew the hinges off and it ripped the top. And I was like, wait a second. This is
knocking on it, looking inside. There's nothing in there.
So, in order to keep your ice good and cold and the meat from getting nasty.
So that's a great idea. And man, cheap too. Like we'll get into this next segment here. Holy smokes, you can be a couple $1,000 into coolers before you know it nowadays.
Oh yeah.
I still don't understand the whole roto molding versus traditional. I don't understand. I just know that, these new suckers, they hold ice a lot longer. Yeah. As long as you, like I said, the prep thing has been a game changer for me. keeps ice much longer. Putting the moving blankets over them when they're in the bed of my truck, that's been a huge help. And you kind of glossed over this point. I want to reemphasize it. Fill the space.
Fill it. Yep.
Fill the space. Don't get, we'll say, 170 quart cooler, put three frozen water bottles in it and expect it to stay cold.
Because it ain't.
No. You got to fill that sucker to the top. And that's why I'll go back to the like the orange juice bottle thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's a way to eat up space. So our chest freezer in the garage is more efficient and stays colder. And if power goes out or whatever, now you got however many pounds of frozen bottles, you can keep stuff cool.
Yeah, keep things going.
But that, yeah, prepping it and then filling up the voids, man. Fill the space up. Even if you don't, if you got takeout bottles and they ride in the back of your truck when you get meat, that's perfectly fine. But make sure that sucker stays full. Man, the foam, I like that expanding foam tip.
I did it to all the coolers now. And
don't go anywhere. Coming up after the break, Dave, let's talk coolers. We'll dive a little deeper into that. Thanks again to Hunt House Archery Center, Legacy Sports International, Truck Envy, and Out West Buildings for sponsoring the show. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry coming up right now. I understand everybody's busy, especially Sundays between 10 and 11. That's often my tinkering time, I'll call it. So look, if you don't catch the show live, go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. Full episodes are available there under Nevada Backcountry. And for Apple users, go to the App Store, search Nevada Backcountry. Go ahead and subscribe on there, and you can get all the past episodes of the show. We got a mutual friend who's working his way through the show right now.
Yeah.
So I had to do a quick mental inventory and make sure I hadn't said anything horrible. No, I'm kidding.
About the poor guy.
Yeah. Now let's hop into coolers. King of the Hill for the longest time, Yeti. I think they're good. They work great, but I will say, my brother uses Cordova. I think he's got an Orca. He's got a couple different brands of the Roto Molded. I'm going to keep using that word.
Yeah, Roto Molded.
What in the world does that mean, Dave?
I have no idea, but whatever it is, it works.
I use the marketing word they use, Roto Molded, to describe the difference between like your standard run-of-the-mill igloo from Walmart and these new heavy-duty plastic deals.
Some of the tests they had on some of those, are like rolling them off of mountains and stuff, and
pretty dang durable.
They're super durable. That's that roto part.
The roto means it's durable. That's what I have used is Yeti, Cordova, Orca. And I will say, I think the newer upstarts, we'll call them, in this kind of market space probably outperform the, or I know for a fact the Orca does outperform my Yeti.
Yeah, so there's a study done, well, a test, I guess.
Not sure, a cooler shootout?
Yeah, Yeti was a little ways down the list.
Yeah.
So, because I know we've at camp, we usually have friends got kind of like you're a Sitka guy, he's a Yeti guy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I've got two Orcas and then that beautiful new Grizzly.
Yeah, that you won.
That I won at the Muley
Fanatic Foundation Banquet.
Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen. It was well used, or is being well used. I really don't see a lot, big difference between them. I mean, they're a little bit here and there, but you know, when it comes out to staying out in the field for a week or so, the Grizzly one I have is 165 quart, the big one. Yeah.
Took two of us to carry that thing to the car.
Yeah. And I realized, because it's in this little test thing, is the Grizzly 165 and 62 pound cooler. Dry.
Think you put a bunch of frozen ice in there. Man, you're talking about 250 pounds. Yeah.
But we'll use that one to just fill it to the max with ice. That is the ice cooler. You know, the big thing is what do you use in the cooler for?
Like everything
before
we talk
you get
about,
into it. Yeah. What are you using it for? Are you just going to use it for a little camping trip with the family, you know, or are you going to use it for hunting?
Right.
You know, so that'll help you determine like the size you want and then how durable do you really need it to be? Kind of the base thing is if you are using them for hunting, like most of us do, there's a scale on what size to be thinking about, you know, for your hunt. So if you're going out with a few friends and you're hoping to get like one or two deer, so like one deer bone in is 65 to 75 quart cooler. And then if you get two deer, then it's 110 to 125 quart cooler, and that'll allow a little bit of ice to be put in there as well. And then you get into the bigger stuff, the 140 to 165 quarters, and that's two bone-in deer or one bone-out elk.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, and then obviously anything bigger than 165, there's only a few companies that make coolers bigger than 165. So,
okay, I will say from personal experience, the 65 quart is only if you're not putting the cape in there.
Yes.
And it's pretty, so yeah, if you are putting the cape in there too, a 105, 105 quart Yeti is the smallest I would go. If you make allowances for ice in there, the cape, you know, obviously head and horns or whatever, if that's still attached to the cape, man, that's a whole different animal. But let's say you've gone ahead and you've taken the cape off of the skull. Yeah, cape, bone in, 105 is where I would go.
On the cooler front, I have another friend who he took an old cooler.
Okay.
Like an old igloo or something, you know. He cut holes in the side. It's kind of like channels.
Yeah,
in the side. He undid the lid so that you could pop it back off and on, kind of like with screws. And he takes the lid off. He slides the head in, and then the antlers are hanging out of the cooler, and then he puts the lid back on. So the head's in the cooler and the antlers are sticking out of the cooler.
Hey, there's like, another. Yeah, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, that's like Iowa farm boy style fix.
100% it is, yeah.
It was awesome. Going back to these coolers, are there any issues that you feel that you, when you're dealing with the Yeti or any of these higher end rolled, molded, plastic, roto molded?
Yeah.
My thing was, is you open the lid and you're like, that's all the space I got.
Yo, yeah.
I mean, it's the space you have available compared to the size of the cooler.
Well, the walls are so dang thick.
Yeah, like 4 inches thick.
Yep. I would tell people, man, first and foremost, because the latest thing right now that I'm seeing is that everybody likes those soft-sided coolers and they're making them bigger and bigger and bigger. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Soft-sided coolers, good for beer, not for deer. Don't bring those.
Done. That's a good one.
Don't bring them on. Yeah, don't bring them on a hunt. Yeah. They're not going to keep ice. It's great for going to Lake Tahoe, sitting there, you know, throw a sixer in there. You're good to go. Don't buy one of these big soft-sided things. Now,
They don't hold ice at all.
No, they're terrible.
Horrible.
Yeah, but they are not, they're light, so they're nice to carry. But that when I saw they were making like 60-quart soft-sided coolers now, I was like, oh, my God. Again, I'll just use good for beer, not for deer. Like you were saying, here's what I would tell people, you know, and most of the people listening to this, you guys probably already got your coolers. You got, maybe you're a brand loyalist. I would bring up again, Cordova, Yeti, Arctic is making them now, Grizzly,
yep.
Orca. There's a handful of brands out there. They all perform. Pelican's another one.
Pelican's another one.
They all perform fairly similarly. Good enough if you take care of it and hunt with it, but buying too small.
Yes.
Buy right off the rip. Just get it like a 105 size or bigger.
Yep. Go big.
Yep.
Go big, because the last thing you want to do is be like, well, I still got a hind quarter and a bag of meat from the neck and everything, and I've got nowhere to put it.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're going out to hunting camp and you've loaded it with groceries, then you're trying to, I mean, it just turns into a nightmare. So I would tell people, kind of like the optics thing.
Yeah.
Buy the biggest you can afford right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because there is, what's the right word? It's like you lift that lid open on a 65 quart one and you see it from the outside. You're like, oh man.
This thing's huge.
Yeah. You open it up and you realize the walls are like 4 inches thick and man, it does not look that big inside.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. That's what I did with my small Orca that I have, which is now designated to the back of my UTV. that holds my drinks and my snacks and stuff because it's so tiny. I'm like, well, this is
what size is it?
It's a small one. I think it's like a 45 or a 40.
Oh, okay.
It was like the Orca Picnic one or something. And
gotcha.
It was like on sale. And I thought, oh, that'd be cool. That's when I went and got the bigger Orca, which is, I think it's 105, which is
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that
that's
great.
That's my goat. Yeah. That's a perfect size for a deer.
Yeah. And now I've designated them to, for a certain purpose. Like I've got one of them is strictly for all drinks. When I go like to hunting camp.
Okay.
That's all drinks.
Yeah.
And then one of the big, big igloo ones I've got is filled with the ice, and then the hunting food is in that one.
Okay.
And then the big, my big grizzly 165 is packed solid with ice.
That's a good way to do it.
Solid with ice.
You know, Dave, I'm glad you brought up the igloo thing too. I wanted to bring something up. Coleman and Igloo, if you get into their, they're called the marine grade.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like the ones they make for fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are very good, very durable coolers that will keep ice. I know for a fact the Coleman Marine Extreme, you know, it's designed for these guys going way offshore fishing, and that'll keep ice forever. It's a great cooler.
Nice.
So
okay.
There are different, there's like the Igloo you buy at the Walmart on the 4th of July end cap sale.
Yes.
And then there's like the Igloo Marine grade that you have to order.
Yeah.
So I don't want to lump all the Igloo and Coleman products together.
Yeah, no, they make some pretty awesome stuff.
Dave, any last words?
Last word, if you do end up going out and buying yourself a nice, inexpensive or under $1,000 gun, make sure you get out and actually shoot it.
And let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
Tom Gresham up next.